The eugenics constellation does a number of things. First and foremost, it establishes Queen Victoria's reign, the fact that much of this project really is a reflection of her colonizing ambition through the late 1800s and early 19, and of course the extended legacy of that. So I wanted to have her in this exhibition, not only for that, but also for her deep interest and preoccupation with photography and the way that photography was used to represent the evolving conquered world that she was creating. And I flag it also because there's another individual of this time frame that was equally conscious of photography, which is Frederick Douglass, a formerly enslaved scholar, leader, abolitionist, brilliant man. But the two of them are both very, very aware, as we shift from painting and other kind of more manual practices of representation, they're both very aware of the power of photography in its efforts to either shape identity or shape a nation. There's a necessary kind of nod to the extended family of Queen Victoria, often considered the grandmother of Europe via the marriage of her 9 children into other royal families. Arguably, hereditary, genetic-wise, Queen Victoria and her first cousin, who she married, Prince Albert, are of German heritage. And so when we think about British Empire, we often think of, you know, the narrative of London and the UK and tea and all that stuff. But that's really kind of, it's important to go back to the reality that the British Empire builds on German sensibilities. And so why I mention that is because there is an image based on Wilhelm I's death. It's the back of a news photograph that actually obscures the image of the Kaiser, but it's more about that proclamation of death that I think is super important, and it is a conversation with the pedestal that's also at the front of the exhibition, in the sense that there was a very famous bust of Wilhelm I that sat on top of that pedestal in Berlin/Kitchener, and there's a very famous story about the disappearance of that bust a couple of times over, and that lends itself to a conversation about how Berlin is ultimately renamed to Kitchener. But also thinking about eugenics, and ironically enough, in this kind of preoccupation with white purity, eugenics, anthropometry, all of those kind of sciences of classification of the body also is happening, again, in the same context in which Queen Victoria marries her first cousin, which introduces a whole kind of lineage of physical fragility and weakness, specifically hemophilia, that comes through inbreeding, right? So the irony of this preoccupation with purity when in fact the royal line itself is already completely damaged. So there are other kind of introductions of discussion of body classification. There is the cover of a journal called The Concordia, which ironically was like African Times, an Orient Review. It's basically about British Empire and extraction between these two nations and the relative kind of sciences and discussions that come out of the culture clashes. And so one of the key things that's important about this one is cranial development and its relation to art. Again, the sizing of brains, and that sits next to an inverted image of an African bushwoman's brain that was kind of rendered in the middle 1850s. But there's also other things. There's an image of the portrait of two William Wests. One of the things about photography of this time frame that I'm really interested in is the classification of the black body. This image in particular is in response to the Bertillon system, which was a classification system created by a French former police officer who believed that, you know, you could pick characteristics of criminals by their physical appearances. Now, what's interesting to me about this particular image is that these are two black gentlemen that are in the same institution with the same name and with the same physical characteristics. And so it kind of undoes the Bertillon system in the sense that it's a flawed system, as we understand of present day mugshots. It's a terribly flawed practice. And this is the beginning of that practice. And then, of course, next to that is the eugenical classification of the human stock. And this used to hang is this part of the University of Guelph's eugenics program?
Yeah, it's Southern Western Ontario, which is critical, right?
Yes.
Because this is a zone, this is a region where we know many black folks started new lives on their path to freedom, right? So it's close. But it's from the University of Guelph's collection. It's a slide that was presented at one of the eugenics congresses in the U.S.
I think the last image I'll kind of point to is it's the pages of a poem by Duncan Campbell Scott. We know him as the gentleman behind that's a very generous term. The bureaucrat. The bureaucrat that we hold responsible for Indigenous residential schools. And then beneath that is this curious introduction of E. Pauline Johnson, who is from the Mohawk Nation, connected to Joseph Brandt, who shows up in the exhibition in other constellations. And she's a curious individual in that, you know, the Confederation poets and all of those Canadian artists that were being built in the late 20s and 30s via Vincent Massey and whatnot, they had made a point of including E. Pauline Johnson. The logic here is, one, that she was married to a deputy of Indian Affairs in her lifetime. And that opens up a conversation about Mohawk Nation, Joseph Brandt, and how the Mohawk Nation in particular has had like a dual identity and a very real investment in relations with British Empire. Not something that is still represented in our National Gallery, the binary that is the thing that I think this exhibition is trying to break through. There is more to the Canadian narrative than just white and Indigenous. And so the exhibition also does the job of complicating that narrative by the introduction of slavery within Indigenous communities as well.